This week, we'll hear from Marian Nelson and Jason Ramirez. Marian Nelson is the president of the Peninsula Art Guild, which runs the Kenai Fine Arts Center. Marian's encaustic piece is called Tidal. To start off with, how long have you been in this community? For as long as I have been around, for sure, probably twice to three times that.
Right. I arrived on the scene in 1963.
How did you come across art in your life? Was that something you did as a kid or picked up in school or learned somewhere along the line?
I certainly took art all through high school, and the college that I have taken, about a couple years of college, I've focused primarily on art, and both out in southern Minnesota and here. Had very fortunate to have had some really wonderful art teachers locally, Jim Evenson being one, and then the marvelous workshops that the Art Guild, when we started it, we certainly wanted to bring in the big guns, as it were, to give workshops, and we did. You'd have to be a little bit older to remember them now, which is foreign to my ears, but Alex Combs and Keith Apple and Jerry Conway and Pat Austin and many others that were primo guys and gals on the UAA faculty. And they were very gracious about coming down here, giving workshops, judging and jurying our shows that we started, the juried art show, the open show, which would then be judged. And they were great. But then others, too, that helped start pottery classes here. Mark Irvis, a long time ago, some of the first pottery classes, and others that have come along more recently. We've had some great workshops in the past few years at the Art Center with Susan Joy Scher and Jonathan Green and Arlana DeRocky, who had a marvelous pottery show, very unique pottery style. So lots of different influences, and our own teachers, Celia Anderson, Cam Choi, you know, we've been very fortunate to have some very talented folks as instructors.
And as you were taking some of these classes and workshops, did you have any goals for what art was going to be in your life along the way? I mean, did you set out intending that you were going to do shows and sell your work, or was it more of a, oh, this seems like a fun hobby to have? How did you kind of conceptualize that for yourself?
I wouldn't have called it a fun hobby. I've called it something you just don't have any choice in. It's what I am. It's what I do. You know, it's very incidental if I sell things. If I do, yippee, but I don't do it to sell it. What I'm working in, what I have been working in for the past roughly 15 years in caustic is an expensive media, and I sure as heck don't give away my work. So that means the prices are a little higher than maybe people want to pay, and I also don't make a special effort to get my work out into local galleries, if you will, to show. So I'm one of those people, you kind of have to find me, I guess, or see if I'm in a local fundraiser, huh? Like the one we're having with the Art Center's having with KDLL now.
Indeed.
Or the Harvest Auction in the fall at the Art Center. I mean, I always donate some pieces to that. And then every once in a while, I'll sell something. So it's, I have found that it's been, when people are taken with the look of encaustic is what appeals to them as much as anything. The shows that I've participated in with my encaustic friends in Anchorage, every now and then I'll sell something there. But I don't do it to sell it. It's great if I do, because as I said, it is expensive. But, you know, it's I don't have a choice, and I'm going to do art one way or the other. I may not do a lot of it, but I'm going to do it, and I won't stop doing it.
So what does it do for you then that you're so drawn to creative pursuits like that?
Drives me crazy. I mean, I think about it a lot. I may not be actually, my hands might not be in it, but my mind's always working on it. It's always something to figure out, because there's something I'm going to do. And so I'm kind of going through it visually in my head as to why can't I get the look I want on a piece or pieces? Why? And then I might see something online that here's somebody's demonstrating some of their work, and there's a piece of that that fits the puzzle in my brain, like, aha, there it is. That's what I need to do. You know, layer the colors this way or that way, and don't do it this way, but do it that way. So, you know, it's puzzling. It's a puzzle. It's a challenge. And it certainly rides around in my brain all the time.
So encaustic, certainly a very old art form, right? But maybe not as immediately known as like watercolor or oil painting. What got you into encaustic?
Well, how I got into encaustic is very serendipitous to me. A good friend of mine had taken an encaustic workshop in Anchorage. And at that time, there was just one person teaching it and who had a studio that she opened to people who were familiar with the medium. A very, very small studio, very small. And my friend took the class just because she likes to learn new things. She's not particularly an artist, but she likes to delve into different things. So she called and told me about it and sounded interesting, like, yeah, we should do this. So I did. And then she and the instructor were talking about this one time as I had been flying in to take more and more and more workshops. And they wondered how my friend had found out about the first one, the one that she took. And there was no seeming connection of any kind that they could figure out. You know, did you pick up the card here? Did you hear about it? Nothing, nothing, nothing. And so she didn't know how she found out about it. And the only reason I knew that it was going on is that she told me about it. So it's just really by accident that I even knew encaustic instruction was happening. And if it hadn't been for that, I probably still wouldn't know anything about encaustic. So anyway, I was going into Anchorage for a number of years, taking workshops and then buying studio time, and eventually had my own studio built in the backyard, which has been great. You know, just it's not a media you can do in your house. If you do, you've got to have a kind of a separate situation because of the heat and the amount of stuff that it takes to be successful with it or to be able to work with it. As someone who's done one form of art or the other most of my life, you know, we always say, oh, I'm not going to get involved in another media. I mean, I've done pottery, I've done watercolor, I've done pen and ink, I've done acrylic, you know, blah, 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 you name it. And sure enough, you know, that's all it took.
So at what point did you start considering yourself an artist? Do you remember a moment or an achievement, or have you just always thought of yourself in the terms of, I'm an artist, that's what I do?
I do remember that. I don't remember when I was finally comfortable saying that, but I distinctly remember being or thinking that that was quite an assumption to actually call myself an artist, that I was essentially qualified to do that, or personally thought I was.
So when was that moment for you? When did you start thinking of yourself as an artist?
I don't think in terms of years. I can't give you a year or, but I would say within the last 20. How's that? That I can sort of honestly say that I feel that way. Whether somebody else thinks you are or not is, of course, another matter. But to know inside yourself that that's who you are, that's what you are. It doesn't have anything to do with any kind of level of success or competence or, you know, whatever. But that's where you are inside. That's your core. And all of us sort of felt the same way, not that they started thinking about it the same way I did, but everybody recognizes that it's who you are. You kind of don't have a choice. You're going to follow that that lead no matter what.
And what is it about encaustic that you particularly enjoy? I mean, it certainly has its own look, which is really interesting. It's also pretty, it's challenging. It's kind of finicky. It's expensive, as you said. But it's one of my favorite things about it is it's painting in a way, and you get these really rich colors, but it also has a sculptural element to it as well. And I'm just curious, what is it that has so engaged you that's the direction that you went with your art?
That it can change on a dime, so to speak. I mean, you can, as a person in one of my workshops said, so we're never really finished. that's kind of it. You can keep working and reworking things. And generally when I do, I mean, it's a pain because I want to be done with something. And then I come back in my studio the next day, a few days later, whenever, and oh, how could I possibly have thought that is done? And I'll, you know, turn on the heat gun or light up the torch. And fortunately, most of the time it gets better, but boy, not always. I mean, there's certainly been times when I've scraped the whole panel bare. And those are times when I know I have a goal. I'm working toward the goal. I'm trying to make it do what I want it to do. And it's just, and at the same time, I'm telling myself, you are kidding yourself. This is not going to work out. Why do you keep wasting time and media on this? Well, you know, I'm just stubborn enough to see if it'll work out. And those usually do not. What does happen is that something better can come out of that, or some, as in a couple of pieces, sometimes there's things buried in the wax. So there's many, many layers, at least for me. I put a lot of wax on. Some people don't put that much on. Some things are buried in the wax that you forgot you put in there, like paper or something. Or as you're scraping, there's other layers that are revealed and like, oh, look at that. I better take advantage of that. So there's those kinds of surprises. And that's certainly one of the best things about encaustic, is it gives you the opportunity to have multitude surprises over and over again.
So then how do you know when a piece is done?
You just do. You just do. I don't know any other way to, you know, it balances. It looks okay. The colors are okay. Do you want to keep messing with it? Not today. So today it's done. Tomorrow it I might rev up the heat again and get in there and change. Like there's one that I had showed you earlier that has had, oh, I don't know, 4 or 5 changes.
Incantations kind of seem about right for encaustics, though, too. Yeah, that's not a wrong word, I think.
Yeah, it's and then using oil pastels is part of the coloring too, and that's great because then I'm not heating up the colors again and all of that on the palette, on the hot palette. So that's kind of a relief because I can mess around with it in a different way. I still have to ignite the torch to fuse them because the oil pastels and Indian ink and other things, they all have to be fused in. And that's not difficult. It's just something that you have to know. You don't just smear on some oil pastels because you happen to like the color in one place. You have to work it around. You have to make it work the piece or complement what you've done, and then mess with it. Some scraping, some this, some that, and you do have to fuse it, and it does fuse right in with the encaustic.
So kind of
it's interesting.
Not necessarily a point of no return, because like you said, you can always just heat it up and scrape it off if you're really not feeling
absolutely.
It.
Absolutely. And that's, you know, something that people have to learn. I certainly wasn't doing that right from the get-go, but, you know, be brave. Absolutely be brave and just scrape the heck out of it. I'm not always, obviously, but, you know, don't be afraid to do that, because scraping is a great tool and things can happen thanks to scraping. I do a lot of it.
Yeah, it seems like kind of a medium where you're flying somewhat without a net. I mean, you might go into it with a goal, but a lot of shaping and changing and exploration along the way, which kind of sounds like the exact opposite of like watercolor, for instance, where, you know, a lot in watercolor you're not coming back from, especially when you're talking about like white space.
Mm-hmm.
Is that a temperament thing? Is that a personality thing that you're drawn to that approach rather than the very more structured? Okay.
That's just me, because there certainly are very regimented encaustic artists who do portraits. Who do printing with encaustic, sort not lithographs exactly, but printing with a press even. I mean, and or where there's some heat involved. It's, you know, I'm dying to do that. Just dying to do that. That would just suit my brain a lot, because I love white on white. I've always been drawn. I've been drawn to that for a long time. And you can see a lot of white in a lot of the work that I do. And it's, you know, it's certainly not everybody's cup of tea, but I just love it. And so that's a challenge. How to be successful this go around with some version of white on white with maybe some color, maybe not, maybe it's too boring. So I'll add some color. Who knows? Maybe I'll add this. I have a little series that I did some years ago sitting over at St. Elias Brewery asking the waitress if she had some scrap paper in the by the till. And so she brought a strip of vertical paper and I ripped it up into small pieces about 3x3 or so and brought them home and put them in the middle of some 8x8 boards and made a series of six out of that. And between pencil lines and a string, it made a series that I still just love. I wish I had put them on some encaustic panels, but they're just on plywood, cabinet level plywood panels. And they're, I will yet frame them in some way, shape or form so they can, I can show them better, but they have a flow to them that's not like anything else I've done. It's certainly white on white and it's certainly subtle. The pencil lines on it are small or light. Nothing's bold. And it's just fun to see that, how that string is aligned from one to the other, to the other, to the other. It's a simple thing, but I love it. It's my own piece.
So where do you get inspiration from? Some of your pieces are more representative. I'm not sure that's the right term. Some are more abstract than others. Maybe it's better to approach it from that direction. Do you get much inspiration just from being about in the world, or are things coming to you maybe more abstractly, like ideas or feelings that you want to convey in your work rather than, oh, that's a scenic view that I want to reproduce in some way?
That almost never happens. It's just out of my head. Okay. I'm out of my head, Jenny.
Well, and so let's talk about the piece that you've donated for the show. So it's, I mean, certainly representative, evoking seaside, seashore. Got your white space in it, which you love. And then down towards the bottom, it's kind of a more, you know, evoking waves. Is that specifically what you were going for? Or is that just something that developed as you were working with the wax and you dug it and decided to roll that way?
Well, it certainly is something that happened, but I spend a fair amount of time at the Kenai Beach with my dog who loves to swim in that ice cold water. And I mean, it's a passion for him, and seeing that tide come in when it's really broiling. Oh my gosh. It's just, you know, it's impressive to all of us. I used to run on the beach, and I'm such a night owl that my favorite time to run was 8:30 at night. And if the tide is coming in and it's crashing, I have it permanently embedded in my brain, the look of a significant tide coming in late in the evening. It was fairly high tide. And so the waves were, you know, quite spectacular for this area. So that comes back to me. My paintings don't look like that, but, you know, I'm definitely drawn to that action like most of us are, and the rocks and the big ice chunks this time of year and so forth and so on, and some subtle colors in there, kind of speaking to the agates that we all like to look for in some of the colored rocks. It's, you know, we live in a very dynamic area in many, many ways, and that's certainly one of them that we all are drawn to. How many people take pictures of that scene out to the inlet over and over and over again? We can't resist it. We can't resist it.
Yeah, and I think encaustic is a particularly good medium for trying to capture that because you do have so much texture in there. I mean, you get like the subtle little kind of cracks in the wax, and you get the variations of color, and you get the buildup, you know, of layers of wax versus some lower relief sections. So you're not just trying to, I mean, it's such a dynamic and three-dimensional and frothy scene in reality to try and capture that in artwork, to have a medium where you can kind of evoke those things.
Yeah, that particular painting has quite a bit of white on white. It has some crayon that works with. It's not Crayola by any means. it's a crayon that I use, and then it is fused. And when I fuse it with a torch, those lines that I make move around, and that's exactly what I want them to do. They get loose and wavy, and I can make them disappear or go places they didn't intend to go. So there's some subtleties to the surface that you have to kind of look close to see, but it certainly makes it more interesting. And then the swirl of things, you know, what can you say about our water and our beach and our mountains and all that's in between them? It's just absolutely marvelous. So sure, we all respond to that one way or the other. I'm not immune to it. Just to go a little bit with some facts here in cost, I'll read from the handout that I give some of my workshop people. Encaustic is an art form that dates back to the 5th century BC. The term encaustic comes from a Greek word that means to burn in, and that refers both to the medium and the process of painting with that medium. The paint consists of a fluid mix of melted beeswax, colored pigments, and a hardener, which is Damar resin. And then it's applied in layers onto a panel or wood or paper or whatever. You have to, of course, adjust what you're doing depending on what's the substrate. And then use the heat gun or torch or whatever to fuse those as you go along. And generally speaking, you need to fuse every 2-3 layers. Not always, depending on if it's small and you're working pretty fast, then it stays pretty warm, so you don't need to fuse all the time. Otherwise, it'll be moving around on you more than you want it to. And obviously, if you're fusing with paper, using a substantial paper, like a heavy watercolor paper, as terms of weight, you can fuse that pretty much like you would fuse a panel. I love working mostly on what's referred to as Encosta board, which is kind of a 50-cent word of saying it's a cradle panel that's got a surface on it that's particularly suited to using the encaustic medium. And it has, and it doesn't particularly need to be framed. The sides are anywhere from 1/4 inch to 3, 4, 5 inches deep. And I like about 2.5 inch and 3/4 depth. That's kind of an accommodating depth in terms of hanging it on the wall. If it's too deep, it's too deep. And it's also more expensive. They're quite the panels themselves are quite expensive, and there's nothing wrong with using plywood, or what I get, cabinet level plywood, and a whole sheet of it, and buy it at Home Depot, and they're good enough to cut that up for me then in whatever size I want. The whole sheet, that is, say in 10 inch squares or 8 inch squares or 12 inch squares, whatever I want. And those I use for workshops. And I certainly have worked on a lot of them myself when I was first starting. It's, you know, they're fine, but I just prefer the cradle panels, that they just look a little nicer. You can frame all of them, or you can not frame them, especially the cradle panels. You don't really have to frame those. Plywood pieces you would generally want to frame in some way or another.
Correct me if I'm wrong. You don't necessarily need to cover them with glass, though, right? I mean, they're pretty resilient.
No. The pigment fades like any other pigment does if it's in direct sun. You know, the pigment is vulnerable on encaustic like it is on anything else. They don't obviously fade, you know, just like they don't obviously fade in acrylic or oil painting or anything else, but they do over long periods of time. It's good to not hang them in direct sun, to have indirect situation. And some people wonder won't it melt if it's too hot? Well, not in this state, it won't.
Good point.
I did a piece for a friend and her sister who happened to have their birthdays on the same day. And so I made this gift thing. It's not an art show thing, but I made a small piece for them, and it had two hearts on it and a few other things. And they put it by a wood stove.
Oh, no.
Whoops. So one of the hearts slid down and almost all the way off. And I'm glad that they didn't move the paint, if you will. They just kind of kept it all together and rather embarrassingly said, can you fix this area? Well, fortunately, because they had all their paint, all the colors, I didn't have to match anything. It was all right there. I just had to essentially spread it out with the heat gun or the torch. And you couldn't tell that it had been ruined. It came back together just fine. Well, I mean, there's so much flexibility to it. You can just do an awful lot. And it's fun to show people when they don't have any idea what it is, and I will bring them into the studio and say, okay, here we go. I'll do this and I'll do this and I'll do that. And then we'll take the heat gun to it, or especially the torch, because that moves faster. And things start moving around. And invariably, the next comment from the people watching is, oh, I see what I mean. That's what gets you. It's what gets me too. You know, I think I'll work on some cold wax, which is another medium I work with once in a while that doesn't act like encaustic. And I just get suckered into it myself. I just, let's see what's going on this side of my studio. And sure enough, I'm just right back in the hole again.
What has been your relationship to art over the last year during quarantine? Certainly, we've all been feeling a little isolated. Has that been something you found yourself more drawn to, needing a creative outlet? Or have you been, I don't know, some folks have been a little more shut down and not able to go there in circumstances like that?
I have a quick answer for that. That has not inspired me in the least.
Okay.
I have not wanted to do a darn thing. And it's actually just been recently that I've been in my studio messing around a little bit. So I appreciate this show, Jenny. It prompted me it was a good kick in the butt to do something. But the other part of what I do in terms of art is certainly working on projects for the Art Center. I happen to be president of the Art Guild Board at this time, which I've done in the past. I've been involved with the Art Center over the years. Was part of the three people who started it, and I've been in and out of involvement and in again for the past, 5 years, 6 years again. And so I'm dedicated to seeing us through this remodeling in the back area of the Art Center. And it's a great little place. We're lucky to have an Art Center in this little community, and it's wonderful to make things happen for other people, other artists, as well as myself.
Well, and you've been involved in KDLL as well for many, many years, so we appreciate your support for this fundraiser in particular and all you've done for both organizations over the years.
Well, I love them.